Australia has a housing problem, and that might be the understatement of the century, but a home isn't just four walls and a roof. It's safety, stability, and for many Australians, it's also the cornerstone of long-term financial security. So when house prices dip, homeowners can't help but think, there goes my retirement fund. But here's the big question. What would it take for us to let go of that mindset, to stop treating housing as an investment strategy and start seeing it as a basic right? Could we ever be willing to give up some of those big capital gains that our properties have earned over the past few decades? And I'm seriously asking you, would you accept a lower sale price for your house if it increased the likelihood that someone else could live with the security and prosperity that you've had? Interestingly, one Australian city, Melbourne, is starting to break the pattern of ever-climbing house prices. So this morning, let's dig into what's driving that shift and explore some ideas for how we can share the wealth and privilege of home ownership. With me is Michael Fotheringham. He's the CEO of the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. Michael, welcome back to Life Matters.
Good to be with you, Tegan.
So we know house prices need to come down if people are going to be able to afford to buy them. What's happening in Melbourne at the moment?
Well, it's not so much about prices falling as not growing as quickly. And you know, we need to think about the growth in house prices compared to wages. So if wages are going up, you know, around 4%, house prices growing up around that sort of amount maintains affordability at the same level, whereas if house prices are growing faster, they're getting more unaffordable. And what we're seeing in most of the country is that they're growing much faster than wages, and so housing is becoming increasingly unaffordable. In Melbourne, it hasn't played out quite the same way for a bunch of reasons. Some of those are to do with different tax settings in Australia that parts of industry are not very happy about. Some of it's to do with, actually, we have a different mixture of apartments and freestanding houses in Victoria. So Melbourne's building more apartments compared to most of the country. Still not nearly as many as they build freestanding houses. Nationally, we build 6 houses for every individual apartment we build. But Melbourne's pushing against that curve a bit. So, you know, there's a bunch of factors at play.
What is it intentional? Like, are the policies have been designed to do this? It's not just that market is underperforming in a traditional economic sense.
No, it's not. I wouldn't call it underperforming. It's performing quite strongly, actually. It's just that there's extremely strong performance from a market sense in most of the country, which is pushing prices up and up and up. But you know, in every transaction, there are two parties, aren't there? There's the seller, the vendor, and the buyer. And house prices going up quickly is great for people who already own property because they can get a better value. But for those who need to buy, a super strong market's a problem for them. So, you know, it's a different balance that we're seeing.
Have there been more first home buyers being able to get into the Melbourne market because of this?
It's changing the balance, that's right. So rather than favouring investors ahead of first home buyers, we're starting to see some actually effective policies getting that balance a bit closer to right.
Like you said before, if you're a homeowner already, you want the price of your house to go up because that's the way our whole system is kind of geared towards. That's where you can build wealth. If we are asking people to accept less of an increase in their property values, people are affected by that differently depending on when they bought their house.
Well, absolutely. If you bought the home you've lived in and been there for 25 years, its value has grown enormously over that time. And so, you know, whether you get the absolute most you can from the sale of that property or actually are willing to you know, not push quite so hard, it probably won't affect you that much. But if you bought in the last 5 years, then that growth, that price appreciation becomes quite important because you want to make sure you haven't gone backwards for a start. But you also want to have some additional funds from it that'll cover things like stamp duty, but also, you know, allow you to move into the next place that's more suited.
One person's texted saying, will the people who sell their houses also have to buy in that same market? Lowering your house price also means getting a cheaper home. This person says the banks are where reform needs to happen. They benefit too much from the insane housing market. Michael, where does change need to start?
Well, I'm not really expecting a flood of calls saying, yes, I'll take a low price on my sale. I think we'll have a fairly quiet line if that's the only question we ask. But yeah, look, yeah, the banking sector does have a role to play in this. But, you know, it's also, there is an attitudinal thing here. We do think of housing as a financial asset almost more than we think of it as shelter. And so, you know, when we talk about housing, we frequently talk about the economics of housing more than we talk about actually the shelter and the sense of community and home.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, talking to Dr. Michael Fotheringham from the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. We're talking about what it would take to level the playing field a bit with housing affordability in Australia. One of the things that I'm asking you is whether you would accept a lower price for your house if someone else could get the security that you have. Michael reckons that you're not going to want to. Jay says, why are we always being pressured to either downsize our homes as we age or now discussing to accept a lower price for our home? Why aren't we targeting the property investors who own multiple houses? Many of us are just managing to maintain our home and are not wealthy. Michael says, yes, absolutely. The capital gain on my once humble house has been ridiculous and I don't need nor can I use the millions now locked up in my little cottage. House prices must come down to enable our children to enter the market, and I and many of my older friends would welcome this. Well, Michael Fotheringham, either you're texting me under Michael on the text line or there is someone out there who's happy to accept that lower price. Also with me is Gavin Jackman, who's an advisor for the charity Homes for Homes, which is kind of trying to do this. Gavin, tell me about how Homes for Homes works.
Oh, thanks, Tegan. Look, Homes for Homes is an interesting program. We give those people who are lucky enough to own their own home the opportunity to make a donation when they sell their property. So when they've benefited from that capital gain that you're talking about, they can make a donation and then that money accumulates in each state and territory. And we put that out to the market, to the social and affordable housing providers, to increase the supply of housing, which is one of the major problems. And we leverage every dollar that people are kind enough to donate on their home. We leverage that $8 to one.
How do you find the people who want to sign up for this?
Well, you can go on our website today, homesforhomes.org.au, and you can sign up your home today. And what you donate, and this is a very important point because it goes to challenge the point that you made about taking a lower price. Homes for Homes operates on a voluntary donation of 0.1%. So on an $800,000 house, we're talking about an $800 donation. And if you've had a capital gain of $100,000 or $200,000 over the period you've owned your home, that's a pretty small donation, we would argue. And it's tax deductible, and it goes straight into increasing the supply of affordable housing.
So that money gets sort of pooled into grants that affordable housing developers can apply for.
That's right. And we're all about expanding the supply and expanding the supply for this vulnerable group of people.
How much of a dent are you, like, it's very honourable. It's such an interesting model that you're talking about. It's not one that I've heard of before. How does it sit in the demand for social housing, which is only increasing across Australia?
Well, it's a contributor, but it's not a silver bullet. This, we're talking about generational change. We're talking about people planting a seed for today so that people can sit under the shade of the tree tomorrow. This is a long-term change where we want this to become part of the property transaction system, and we've built onto that. So it's a very low-cost solution for people to be able to contribute. There's no cost to the individual for the entire time that they own their home. And they only make the donation at the time they sell. It's a little mechanism that sits on title to remind them that they made this promise to donate when they're benefiting from that capital gain at the time they sell their home. And 0.1%, as I say, $900 on a $900,000 home, it's a pretty small amount of money in the scheme of things.
Michael, you've done some stints advising Homes for Homes in a voluntary capacity over the years. Where do these kinds of projects sit in the mix of solutions?
Oh, it's part of the wider system of solutions. I mean, one of the things we talk about, and as Gavin mentioned, there is no silver bullet. There's no one solution. We need a whole lot of different coordinated efforts. And what Homes for Homes is doing is adding to the supply of social housing. And, you know, we need more. We all recognise that we need more social housing. We have waiting lists or registers of interest in every state and territory in the tens of thousands. And so the more homes we can put on that are made available through the social housing housing system, the better for all of us. It takes pressure off the private rental system. It takes pressure off our systems as a whole. So it's a positive thing that costs almost nothing to the vendor, who will barely notice that sort of donation in the hundreds of dollars, which, as he mentioned, is tax deductible. So, you know, it's a pretty light touch intervention that people can invest in to help.
Here on ABC Radio National, you're listening to Life Matters. I'm Tegan Taylor, and I'm with Dr. Michael Fotheringham from the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute and Gavin Jackman from the charity Homes for Homes, which signs homeowners up to agree to donate 0.1% of the sale of the eventual sale price to their home to the charity, which then gets pooled, and affordable housing developers can apply for those funds as grants. And I'm asking you whether you'd accept a lower sale price for your house, if there's something that you would do with your capital gain if you're a homeowner that would help other people get into the market. Mark says, I recall when investors paid higher interest rates to owners. Why not try that again and investor rate subsidies and subsidise a rate for owner buyers? Another text says, we've just sold an apartment and we're prepared to accept the asking price offered by the buyer. The real estate then negotiated a price above this. Fiona says, I've spoken to many people who would be happy to sell for less, but a large problem is they don't feel safe in terms of being looked after when they age. So they have to make sure they'll be able to live to a decent standard. Looking at those countries that have good pensions, this is not a problem. So we have to change the system to stop this loop. So, Michael, we're talking about big structural questions about how we take care of ourselves and the people around us as we age. What do you see as being the right mix from the housing perspective?
Well, I think, you know, the text coming through it raising some really good points. I think, you know, what we do around retirement, living and aged care is really important and is a big consideration in particularly those people who are selling properties after a long period of residence. So, yeah, those are very legitimate concerns. And so the structure to it, what tax settings we use, what social policy settings we have as a nation, all impact on this. And these are all sort of intersecting. It's why housing is one of those really complex areas that it's not a simple, clean portfolio, but it actually has a little bit of everything involved in it.
Gavin, when you're basically asking people to kick in for the privilege of providing shelter for someone else, what kind of reaction do you get? Are people open to that message?
Well, they are, because people understand that this is a problem that the country faces, and they're looking for a way to be able to assist. And so this is a way, effectively, that we can all link arms across the country, and if we're lucky enough to own our own home, then we can make that small donation, and we know that it increases supply. We have granted so far $3 million across 28 projects, and that's housed over 400 people. So these are projects that are actually providing that roof over people's head, that security, somewhere where they can lay their head down safely at night. This is a really important program that I encourage everyone to log on, homesforhomes.org.au, and sign up. And Tegan, can I say, even if you're renting, you can donate 0.1% of your rent. So if you're paying $600 a week, that would be $2.40 a month that you sign up to donate. It's a small amount, but across many people, it makes a huge difference.
So, Gavin, you're 10 years in with Homes for Homes. It's a long-term project. What do you see as the future for this charity?
I'd like that to be where someone who's lucky enough to own their own home, it becomes just part and parcel of what we do. The beauty of this system, Tegan, is that it is so simple, very simple to sign up. You don't have to do anything until you sell your home, and then you get the reminder from the conveyancer that you made this commitment, and the money just goes out through the normal disbursements process. So the money goes out for stamp duty and land tax and all of those sorts of things, and then a small portion goes out for Homes for Homes, and it's tax deductible. So it just becomes part of that property system, which we can all participate in when we're lucky enough to own our own home.
Michael, it's so lovely to hear what Gavin's doing, but truly at a country level, should we be relying on charities to make housing affordable, or should we be changing policy?
Well, we should be doing both. I think there is a role for charity, and I think there's long been in this country a role of charitable and philanthropic efforts to try and improve housing for those who are most vulnerable. But you know, we absolutely need to do policy reform, and what we're seeing across the country these days is every state and territory government, the federal government, and many local councils are increasingly engaged in really trying to address the housing challenges we see. I like the way you framed it at the start of this segment as a housing problem rather than a housing crisis, because I think the problem with the word crisis is it sounds like it's a time-limited, it's an incident, but what we have is actually a generational problem, and it's been 40 or more years of policy settings that have done the wrong thing or you know, market forces that have pushed in the wrong direction that we need to turn around, and that's not going to happen overnight, so we need to address this as a real generational issue.
What's the most pressing, what's something that could change today that would actually make the biggest difference?
Well, I think what we're hearing from governments at the moment is a strong message around the need for more supply, and that's absolutely true. You know, if there's not enough housing to go around, we have a real problem. Beyond that, the affordability of the property that's available is the next level of challenge, and that's the sort of thing that we've been talking about today. So, you know, those are the two key dimensions of it. Is there enough of it? Is it affordable? And then you can start to talk about, is it appropriate? Has it got the right sort of features? Has it got the right sort of energy efficiency and so forth? So that, you know, are we getting to a point where we actually have an appropriate housing supply for our nation?
Michael, Gavin, thank you both so much for joining me. Dr. Michael Fotheringham is CEO of the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. Gavin Jackman is an advisor for the charity Homes for Homes.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.